Part 2. Chapter 17. Carl Forces Tomorrow. Most people go through life thinking that tomorrow they're going to do something great. Tomorrow will be the day that they wake up and discover what they were put on this earth to do. But then tomorrow comes and goes, as does the next day. Before long, they realize that there aren't that many tomorrows left. Carl Force knew this feeling well. He never thought he'd end up this way, sitting in a mauve-colored cubicle in a nondescript skyscraper in downtown Baltimore, staring at his computer until the moment he could collect his things and leave. Another day, another tomorrow. Carl was what's known in law enforcement as a solar agent, a guy who only works when it's light outside. He often referred to himself this way, half joking and half proud of the title. When the clock struck 3, Carl would slip out of the office and drive back across Baltimore to his wife and kids in his government-issued Chevy Impala. To anyone who walked by his cubicle, Carl looked like the kind of person he was trying to scrub off the streets, a drug dealer. He almost always wore a black beanie over his bald head. His sunken dark eyes and a peppery beard of stubble hid the wrinkles in his stout face. And then there were the tattoos covering his body, including the black Celtic tribal pattern that swerved across his back and down his arms. Like most of the old-timers at the Drug Enforcement Administration, Carl was in his mid-40s and jaded. Sure, he was a narcotics cop, but his job was as mundane as any other corporate office worker's. He spent most of his days staring at his desktop computer, sipping stale coffee from one of the promotional mugs he had picked up at DEA conventions over the years. Sometimes he listened to Hope 89.1, a local Christian radio station that would whisper the Lord's Prayer into his ear, promising that if Carl followed the ways of the Bible and did the right thing, he would be granted the life he had always wanted. Life hadn't always been this way. 13 years earlier, in late 1999, when he joined the administration, he ate, slept, and shit the DEA. In those early days, he absolutely loved the thrill of a bust. Waking at 4 o'clock a.m., slipping on his bulletproof vest, checking the chamber of his gun, and kicking in a door or two, yelling at some big-time dealers or low-level meth heads to freeze and get the fuck on the floor. It was as exciting a job as anyone could wish for. But over time, the early mornings started to strain. The door kicks were less exciting. When one dealer went to jail, another filled his seat on the street. The metamorphosis from rash young newbie to jaded old-timer had happened slowly. At first, Carl couldn't find good cases on his own. Then he had trouble making busts. There was also the high pressure of undercover work, where you have to catch someone or they'll catch you. His downward trajectory was compounded by the fact that he'd secretly developed his own substance abuse problem. Finally, all the strain had been too much, and Carl was eventually arrested for a DUI while he was an agent, which led to a mental breakdown 4 years later. He almost lost it all, the family, the job, the cat. But the Lord had stepped in, and Carl had been offered amnesty with this desk job as a solar agent. Since then, there hadn't been many opportunities arriving at his cubicle. But on a late January day in 2012, that was about to change. He was sitting at his desk waiting for another day to pass when his supervisor, Nick, yelled for Carl to come into his office. These moments came often, a shriek from Nick, and some sort of order to take on cases that most agents thought were ridiculous. This included the regular request to go and do jump outs, the name given to the act of driving around Baltimore, pulling up to a street corner, jumping out of the car, and grabbing low-level dealers. Most agents thought this was a pathetic way of trying to beat the drug problem, as opposed to going after the big bosses, where they believed they could actually have an impact. Still, when Nick called, you went. Nick's office was dark, as usual. While Carl's supervisor was lucky enough to have a window with a paltry view of frozen and barren Baltimore, he always kept the blinds drawn, blocking out even the tiniest pinprick of light. Adding to the darkness, Nick had pinned posters of Iron Maiden and Metallica all over his office walls. "So," Nick said to Carl, "I just got a call about the Silk Road website." Carl perked up. He had heard about this strange website a month earlier at a law enforcement meeting when an investigator with the U.S. Postal Service had given a brief presentation on it. There was a new phenomenon, the postal inspector had said, that was starting to infect mail ports all across the United States, and lots of people were sending small amounts of drugs through the system. The inspector had explained that the connection point for these dealers and buyers was called the Silk Road. Later, intrigued by what the postal inspector had said, Carl searched online and read a few articles, including Adrian Chen's piece on Gawker. He then thought about the implications, which were momentous. You couldn't do jump outs online, he reasoned. But given that Carl had no knowledge of computer forensics, it wasn't a case he would have even thought of being assigned to. That was until Nick called Carl into his office and asked if he wanted to assist a group of HSI agents in Baltimore. "They've picked up an informant who says he can lead them to the owner of the site," Nick told Carl. When Carl asked why he was being asked to join the case, Nick explained. The HSI group in Baltimore was not a drug team and usually tracked counterfeit stuff, or as Nick put it, fake Louis Vuitton bags and shit like that. So if the Baltimore group wanted to go after drugs, they needed a DEA agent on the team. "You want in?" Nick asked. Carl thought about it for a moment. He was at the point in his career where he could have easily said, "No, not interested," walked out of Nick's dark office, and continued living life as a solar agent, coaching his son's football games, going to church with his wife and kids on weekends, and hopefully realizing one day that his tomorrow was his family. Or he could get involved in this investigation and maybe, just maybe, make a name for himself at the DEA. "Sure," Carl said to Nick. He would take on the case. Carl walked out of his supervisor's office, unaware that with the single word, "sure," he was about to enter an underground world so dark and full of avarice that it would drag him in head first, and that as a result of the temptations of the Silk Road, Carl Force was going to lose everything that mattered to him.